Hello, and welcome to the April 23rd, 2023 episode of the musical universe of Professor Hurst. This is Craig W. Hurst, Emeritus Professor of Music, podcasting from my music bunker, along with my faithful canine companion, Carmel the Wonder Dog, to share with you my latest musical interests and discoveries. I claim no special inside information about the latest or greatest music, nor do I know everything there is to know about music. What I am is a lover of music. I enjoy several genres of music, and I share with you what has currently caught my interest, old, new, outdated, and everything in between. Even old music is brand new if you have never heard it before. The universe of music is a vast one to enjoy. From my discussions, you might find something new to you and of interest to expand your own musical universe. I currently receive no compensation or motivation of any kind from any recording label, recording artist, or the estate of any performer or composer, dead and gone, to discuss their music and or recordings. With that out of the way, welcome to my musical universe. My guest today is jazz vocalist Hannah Gill. Hannah Gill is a 26-year-old jazz vocalist, songwriter, and performer based in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in New York City. Currently signed with Turtle Bay Records, her debut jazz album, Everybody Loves a Lover, came out in September of 2023. She has over 10 million streams on Spotify, and her YouTube videos have exceeded 22 million views. She has been covered by the New York Times, Teen Vogue, and National Public Radio, among others, and has toured internationally with postmodern jukebox and jazz pianist Gordon Webster. While on tour, she has performed at legendary venues and Lindy Hop events such as the Sydney Opera House in Australia, Olympia in Paris, Jeju Swing Camp in South Korea, the Snowball in Sweden, and the Casablanca Music Festival in Morocco. When not on tour, you can catch her performing at Company 14, a Baroque burlesque theater in Bushwick. You can also find her performing her original music as well as leading her jazz band all over the city. She can also be seen performing with various outfits in New York City, including the Hot Toddies and the Glenn Kritzer Orchestra. It is my pleasure to welcome to my musical universe, Hannah Gill. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, how are you?
I'm quite well, thank you. And it's really great to see you. And I hope you're doing well also.
Thank you.
It's really great to have the opportunity to talk with you and learn more about you and your music. And because I've been listening to your recordings. And so now I'm finally getting to meet the woman behind the sound.
Ah, yes.
and hopefully my audience will become more aware of you and your music. So it's great to talk with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Well, that's quite all right. You know, Hannah, one of the things I always ask people in the interviews is sort of their origin story. And so I'm curious to know who or what turned the light on for you. What turned you on to music and becoming a musician?
Yeah, so it's funny. It's kind of a crazy story, but I'd say, you know, I've always been a musical kid, a creative kid, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always been something that I knew I wanted in my life. And I grew up listening to jazz music, you know, and I remember, this is hilarious. I remember watching like movies like Who Framed Roger Rabbit or The Mask and seeing the like showgirl numbers and being like, mm-hmm. that. I don't know how, but I want to do that. So I always knew that I loved music. I was always in choir and in musical theater, but I grew up in a small town in Maryland, and I went to school in St. Michael's, Maryland, and I genuinely believed that the only way that you could make a living with music is just to be a music teacher. So that was my plan. I was going to go to college, be a music teacher. My mom's a math, middle school math teacher. I come from a family of teachers, so in my mind, I was like, that's what it is. You know, that was the only path I saw. But something really cool happened where I'll give you the long story because we
That's
have
quite all
time.
right.
But so I transferred schools. I transferred to St. Michael's in eighth grade. And I didn't really know anybody, but I saw that there was a talent show happening. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to do this talent show. And I ended up winning the talent show. And it was like a fun moment for me. And I love St. Michael's. I went there until I graduated. It's the best. But so I had this moment, and my dad works with the YMCA. And so he was having like a proud dad moment and showing the board his like video of me like playing. And he was like, look, I'm so proud. And one of the guys on the board, Bruce Hammonds, he was like, well, you know, my son has a recording studio up in New York. Like, what do you think, like, as a birthday present for Hannah to like go up and, you know, like record two songs that she wants to record, like cover songs, just so she knows how it feels to like be in a studio and, you know, have the like musician experience. So my dad waited until it was my 16th birthday. And then we came up to the city and I saw Michael Kiwanuka and Ben Howard in concert in Central Park. And it was fantastic. And then I went to the studio, Brad Hammonds, Bruce's son. And he played guitar and I sang. I did Two Way Street by Kimbra and a song called The Distance by Christina Perri. And I had a great time. Like, it was amazing to feel what it was like to be in a studio. And I went home, and a couple weeks later, Brad reached out to me and he was like, hey, how would you feel about coming back up to New York to like sing on some of my original music that I wrote? And so I asked my dad, and my dad was like, yeah, okay. And so I came up for a weekend and recorded Brad's music, and kind of this basically started a slow roll in when I turned 16, where I basically started coming up to New York on the weekends or like to play a show at like on a Tuesday at 5 p.m. at Rockwood to like four people. And as I was doing this, I also kind of started writing my own music and incorporated it. And, you know, that was kind of the beginning. And then when it came time to graduate, you know, by at this point, I kind of had my eyes open where I was like, wow, I didn't even realize that you could be a working musician. Like, I saw so many other kinds of like, just out, like ways to satisfy that like outlet, you know, that craving. And so I basically came to a decision where I ended up deferring from school for a year. And like Brad basically started this label called Footnote Records. And he was like, okay, so if you just like promise to focus and try your hardest, like to like do your original music and make it, for that first year, like the record label will help pay your rent for that year and bring you up. And if it doesn't work, you can just go to school just as planned, you know, and carry on. And so after convincing my parents, like I ended up doing that. And so I moved to the city when I was 18, in 2015, and I like started doing it. So and basically when that happened, I got involved. I ended up going to a swing dance class because there wasn't many things that I could do in New York under 21 at night. But I got to go to the swing dance class, and it like opened my eyes to a whole new, like I met a community of people. I was able to like be out until like 3 a.m. and have fun and also exercise, you know. But I also through that I met a whole community of musicians. And so then I started realizing like, oh, you could be a jazz singer in the city, and especially for swing dancers. And then that kind of got me like inspired to really lead down that path. So when I was 18, that's kind of when I got that started. But I don't know, I just always known that I love music, and I have just been tumbling aimlessly into new things. It's nice. I enjoy it.
Well, and it's interesting that it was almost like you were finding well, that you were looking for a niche and you found it. You
Yeah.
know, with the swing dancers and the music that we very much associate with that style of dancing. It's not, just like great music from the 30s and 40s still gets played. There's still those, dances that are still popular in places.
Oh, yeah.
I know, oh, it was probably more back in the late 90s, when there was kind of in general, there was a revival of interest in swing
Which
music and
is
swing
exactly what
dancing.
I grew up in. Like, my parents loved the Squirrel Nut Zippers. Like, it
Oh,
was,
yeah.
oh, yeah,
Oh yeah, I remember going to a concert by the Cherry Poppin' Daddies and
it
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy and
was.
those kinds of things. And we had a local band here in the Milwaukee area called the Swingin' Cools, and they and that and used to go and listen to them, and that was really it was really great. And what you learn from that is that there's, there still remains kind of these, a groups of people that still love to do that kind of dancing. Just like, you don't have to necessarily go to Texas to find people who like to do country western or
Yeah,
line
absolutely.
dancing, things like that. But what's great is then you have a real audience for that kind of vintage of music. And that was really a wonderful opportunity. So it seems like you really just stumbled in a way. No, you danced your way
There you
into
go.
your
Yeah.
niche. There you go. You
Yes,
danced your way in.
absolutely. And
That's
it's funny
really.
to think about because, I was born in 1997. I'm 26. And so it's funny because it's almost like my childhood primed me for this. Because if you like the swing revival, was a thing with the bands, but it also seeped its way into like media and movies. And even just when it came to like theme songs for television shows, like it that the big band swing sound was there. So it was like all of the like media that I really loved as a kid. Looking back on it now, I'm like, oh yeah, no one like it. I've always loved jazz music, even if I didn't have access to like the giant knowledge bank that is all of the beautiful jazz music that has been written, And so my parents listened to like Louie and Ella all the time, and that was and Billie Holiday. So those were kind of my intros. But then once I found swing dancing, and then started to really deep dive into swing music, and then in turn like famous swing artists and their discography, then that's kind of when I, really grew like a huge love and appreciation for the music of the time that like the 90s swing revival was kind of, replicating. So it's funny. It's like a long road to where I am now in terms of just like, oh yeah, I've been consuming media that's always pointed to this my entire life, and this is what I've always enjoyed. But now I understand and know the source of it, and I get to hear these beautiful, obscure tunes, and it's so cool. I love it.
Well, and that's the thing that I love too, that if there's anything I love, it's finding or unearthing a piece of music that hasn't been heard for a good long while, and getting it out and putting it in front of the public.
Oh, absolutely.
On Tuesday nights, I have kind of a regular weekly gig, and I have one of my, well, I've got five different bands that I front. And so this last Tuesday night was a trio that I play with. It's trumpet, guitar, a tuba,
Nice.
and then
Oh,
I
yeah.
sing. And the way I market it, or the way I introduce ourselves to our audience, is that we are purveyors of fine antiques,
I love that.
fine antique music, because most everything we play is pre-1930.
Yeah. Wow.
And Tuesday was also the opening day for the Milwaukee Brewers baseball team, their home opener. And so we did the original 1912 version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game with the verses and the chorus, and got
Wow,
try
that's cool.
the audience singing along, So I love to do that kind of thing. And swing music has been in my blood for almost forever as well, because my
Yeah.
parents, They grew up during the Depression and World War II. I mean, that was their music, and
Yeah.
they used to listen to that and a lot of show music, Broadway show music and things. So I've always had a love for all of that as well. And I've always loved the music of Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller and Artie Shaw and
Oh, yes.
on and on and on. Duke Ellington, Count Basie. I mean, you could just, the list goes on. Some of the great music. And it's infectious. I mean, I don't know how you can not tap your foot and enjoy swing music. There's
Absolutely.
just something to it. So, well, that's really awesome. And be also being able to find out that, hey, I can make a living doing this.
Yeah.
And that's just, I used to teach all my college students. I used to tell them, if you can find something that you love to do and get somebody to pay you to do it, you have just done the greatest con that ever is, because you'll never feel like you work a day in your life. Oh yes, it's hard
Absolutely.
work. It's hard work, but
Yes.
you're doing what you love. And if you can make a living doing what you love, you've got things beat.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have to make a living doing things they don't love.
Oh, I
So,
completely understand. And I always
so.
remember my choir teacher, her and I were really close friends in high school. And I remember when the question of deferring a year was came up, and I was actually having to think about it. I asked her, I was like, what do you think about this? And I remember she said, like, as a teacher, I don't approve at all. But as a friend, I like think that you need to take the chance. And like I always loved her saying that. And I think about it too, because if I would have gone to school, I would have graduated in the fall of 2019, right before the pandemic. And
Oh, yeah.
so in my trajectory, like all like I'm just so grateful for all the little experiences I've had in my life. And those, like, I don't know where I would have been if I would have gone to school. So it's
Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
interesting to think about it, because I used to be very self-conscious about it in the beginning. Like, I was always worried that people would somehow sense that I didn't know how to read sheet music or talk about forms in terms of numbers. Like, I was like, they're gonna catch on. But then the more people I spoke with, the more I kind of was more reassured of what I was doing. And then when the pandemic hit, I was like, okay, like everything happens for a reason. I'm really glad that I got to have these years.
Yeah, because I think thinking about it, what you just said, if you were just coming out of school right before the pandemic, rather than just having your career trajectory interrupted, it
Yeah.
would have been a really hard startup.
Yeah, with debt too. So
Oh yeah. Yeah. So
I
I,
can't
you know,
imagine.
you went the you, you know, looking at the big picture, you made the right choice, because at least you got to get started. And then, of course, we all had to deal with that interruption, but we're back
It's
at it
true.
again. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, super, super. Well, I'm going to ask you another question. Then, thinking back over the years of your career, what have been some of the most memorable moments for you in your career?
Oh, there are a lot of memorable ones. I'll try and condense it. So I worked with this YouTube group called Postmodern Jukebox
Oh, sure,
for,
I know them.
yeah, for like 3 3.5 years. And it was amazing because I started working with them when I was 20, and my first tour with them was in Australia and New Zealand, and I'd
Oh,
never left the
cool.
continental US before. So it was like I got to, I think I traveled to 28 different countries with them from the span of like being 20 to, 23 when the pandemic happened. So I think out of that, we got to play the Sydney Opera House
Oh, cool.
out twice, once in 2017 and once in 2019. And that was like insane. Like, it was crazy. So that was super cool. We also I got to go to Morocco and Tunisia with them, which I thought was amazing. Like, it was just a really cool experience getting to walk around and just experience a completely different part of the world. So I'm traveling with them. I've got a laundry list of like amazing, like really fun stories. But then I'd also say more recently, well, so I also talking about swing dancing, I most of what I do kind of on the day to day is playing for swing dancers and especially traveling to play like Lindy Hop events. And I mainly work with, when it comes to traveling, I always kind of work with Gordon Webster, the guy that plays piano on the record. He's got his own swing band where he's been playing for Lindy Hoppers for like 20 years, you know. So in 2019, I got to go to Jeju Swing Camp in South Korea with him,
Oh,
which was
wow.
amazing. Yeah. So, and it's like this beautiful island where, like, and I love seafood too. So all the food was just like delicious and fresh and like right off the coast. And I had this like seaweed salad that was made of like eight different seaweeds. And it was so good. But so that was an amazing experience. And so I get to travel all over with him. So there's another laundry list of cool places, you know. And then most recently, I think that this one is more like rewarding for, or like, or not, they're all rewarding, but this one is like, it felt like nice and personal to me, like a personal achievement where it was like, so this past, at the end of February, I did a week-long residency at this jazz club in Bern, Switzerland called Marion's Jazz Room. And they reached out to me through my website, and it was my first time booking an international event myself. And I bought all the flights, put it on my credit card. I was terrified. And I got to have a week at this place, you know, where we did, you know, 5 nights of shows, 2 75-minute sets a night. And it made me realize too that there's so much to be gained by having like the same group of people just doing a series of shows like in a week. Because I remember, because I had never done like a residency like that before. Because I made me realize like, oh my God, all I do is play for swing dancers. Like and it made me realize kind of how on autopilot you can get, and not in a negative way, but saying like, I know what 3.5 minutes feels like, and I know it's too fast or too slow for dancers. I know the appropriate amount of solos. Like it is nice to have a sort of structure when it comes to dancers. Like if you play a 7.5 minute song at 190, they're gonna hate you, you know? Like,
Yeah, it's not
so that,
dancing, it's an aerobic
exactly,
workout.
yes. Yeah. But so I remember to like prepare, I was listening to like, you know, my favorite artists and their live shows, and like thinking about like my favorite record, which is Ella's 12 Nights in Hollywood, which is like excellent, the best live record out there. But her tunes, you know, they're all 2.5 minutes. She sings the chorus twice and then it's out. So I was kind of thinking about it in that way. And so when we did the first set, I called 17 tunes in the 75-minute set. And afterwards, drummer Andreas Stenson, he was like, hey, Hannah, you know, like, we can let it breathe. Like, it doesn't need to be as intense. And so then I kind of, it was one of those situations where everybody that was on the gig was just so interested in making like the best show possible. So we were all listening to one another and like making little improvements. And like, it was so helpful to have somebody be like, no, it is okay. You can play a waltz. Like, you can play a song that's like over 200 beats per minute. Like, we can play like a true ballad, you know. It kind of showing me, or just reminding me that like there's so much of what we do that is like that you can play around with, and there's so much like joy that comes out of that. And so I kind of like had a little just being like, oh yeah, like this is fun. I'm like actively like we're using our brains, we're like making a great show. So from the growth of the like sets from that first one on Tuesday to the last one on Saturday was just like amazing. And the band was, it was Andreas Svensson on drums, Philip Ambuhl on bass, and then Gordon Webster on piano. So it was a quartet. So it was just really rewarding for me, which I think like stuck with me, because it's also nice that it was under, you know, it was my band, it was under my name. We got to play my music. Like, I sold all my merch. Like, so it was really wonderful. It was a nice time.
You know, it's you bring up a really interesting point, I think, as a you know, and I relate to what you're talking about as a musician. When you feel and you sense that musical growth, and I'm sure you experience this with the side players in your groups, and that is that There is a certain satisfaction or even pleasure when you're so much into each other's heads that you can like almost you can almost think like one big brain and one
Yeah, there's a
person.
communication element that doesn't really exist if you're switching members every night, you know?
Right. And you get it so much in each other's heads, you can almost anticipate what the person's going to do before they do it, and vice versa. And then you organically, everything just really gels and comes together. And
Absolutely.
I never could find a good way to put that into words, but I know it exists, and I think you
Yeah.
do too. And that is a very satisfying aspect of being a performing musician when things happen, and so it's
Yeah.
yeah.
So it's
Well,
not
that's
as like flashy as being like, here's this big place where I played for like 10,000 people, but I think like it really just satisfied me as a musician. Like, and it made me excited to like just keep doing what we're doing, you know, 'cause it's if you know, if your job is also like if the thing that you love is also your job, sometimes you can kind of lose that and be like, okay, I'm just doing the like not just doing it for money, but like work taking the gigs that can pay my rent and doing these things. So it was really wonderful to have an opportunity where we could play around with it and have fun. And we were paid well, and everybody at the hotel and jazz room was just amazing. So it was one of those things that was like good for the soul. It's like,
Sure.
could you imagine if there were like, you know, 12 spots like that and people could maybe hit two of them a year, like in the difference that that would make and just like musicians' well-being, you know? Like,
Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more because we all have plenty of those experiences like you were describing earlier, where you go play for four or five people,
absolutely.
and in those situations you try to make it the best for yourself and the other musicians on that are on stage with you, and by all rights, do the best you can for those few people. I mean, they made the
Oh yeah,
effort to
give
come out and hear
everybody a
you
show,
play.
you know?
Yeah, I mean, but it's also I think I'd be speaking out, speaking with a forked tongue if I said, that it isn't more fun to play for a larger audience,
That's true, but I will say some of the most memorable shows that I've had have been because sometimes there's this thing that happens where there's so few people in the audience that you're like, let's cut the crap. Here's your private concert. Let's have a good time. And then the banter between everybody is fun. Like it always is a memorable experience, you know, in a good way. Like it kind of is one of those things where you're like, oh, there's a beauty in just having that human connection too. 'Cause then we all have something to laugh about. If I sit there and try and pretend like the room is full, it's gonna feel terrible, you know? But like there's like my dad always said too, he's like, you never know, especially if it's like a ticketed event. You never know how long it took somebody to pull that money together to buy a ticket. Like, you know, so why would you ever give them anything like but your best, you know, because you don't know what it took for that person to come and sit in this chair and like see this show. So
Exactly.
if it's four people, why not give them a fun show and there's something fun and personal because we all got to hang out together, you know? So it's just all about perspective, I think.
Yeah, no, I could agree with you more, and I think too that's part of being a consummate professional. You do your very best regardless. I mean,
Yeah.
because you never know who's listening,
Absolutely.
and that sort of thing. So yeah, those are all very beneficial ideas for my younger listeners to hold on to and
Yeah.
know that that's part of being a professional and an artist is putting a forth regardless of the audience size. I interviewed a leader of a progressive rock band from San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, they're really pretty good, but they do a lot of off the wall things. And one of the off the wall projects they used to do is called Concert for One.
I
They'd
love
have a
that.
drawing, and whoever won the drawing got a personal performance by the band for just them.
That's amazing. I love
Yes.
that.
Yeah, and the person was able to call the tunes and all that, I mean, it was they
Wow.
really have a pretty big fan base, so they could it would draw mostly probably from people that were were
That's so
fans of
fun.
theirs, but it was kind of an interesting concept. So,
I love that. And people resonate, I think, with, showing your personality. I think sometimes, like, us as musicians can sometimes get in our heads of being like, I should be portraying what people expect of, like, when they come to see a show. When in reality, like, the thing that resonates more is just being like, hey, this is me. These are things that I like to do, talk about, be like, kind of letting yourself kind of seep out through it as well. And that always resonates with people. So if you can do something fun and silly like that tells me about that band's personality in a way that like I would not have known before, like lets you in a little bit and it makes you want to like stay and learn more. So.
I think that's all excellent points. Those are all good things to keep in mind about our art form and how we share it.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
so, well, I want to kind of get to some mechanics type
Yes.
questions, if you would. Now, I remember one time I was in the audience of a jazz clinic, and Clark Terry, the great trumpet player, flugelhorn player, was doing the clinic, and he was talking about learning how to play jazz. And he said, with jazz, first you imitate, then you assimilate, then you innovate.
Yep, couldn't agree
So I have two questions for you. Who has informed your style of singing, and who has informed your particular vocal quality
more.
of your vocal instrument?
Yes. Okay. So for the first one is vocal inspirations for maybe like phrasing or how you,
Style.
yes, styling. So I would say Ella Fitzgerald is my number one, and for both of these questions for different reasons. But I have a tattoo of her on my ankle. But there's the way that for this question, her ability, her phrasing, in my opinion, is so phrasing for me is something that is probably the most important when I'm listening and like for what I am trying to achieve for myself. Like, I feel like it's almost like, you can swing a vocal or you can float like a vocal over the instrumental, but if like your phrasing isn't there, it's not gonna feel like it's part of it. Like, I love when it feels like it's the same part of the tune, and nobody does that better than Ella. Like, her phrasing is just, she always is perfectly in the pocket of every song, and she can also just like swing a melody like no other. So those are two things that I just really love. So I'd say she's my number one. But then when it comes to styling, so a big part of my intro to be like becoming a jazz singer was a guy named Glenn Kreitzer. I don't know if you know him. He has a big band. And
I know
so
the name, I don't know him.
there you go. Yes. But back in the day, it was kind of like this would have been maybe 2016. Like, I had just kind of started singing jazz music. He heard me sing at something. I think I sat in. And he reached out to me and he's like, hey, I'd love to hear you sing with my big band. We're doing this show for New Year's Eve Eve, which is this like event that my friend puts on. And he was like, here's a list of tunes, pick one. I want you to sing with the big band. And I was like, ah, okay. So it was When I Get Low, I Get High. And I show up, I sing the song. I don't hit any of the low notes properly, but I'm like giving it my best. And I had a great time. And Glenn came up to me and he was like, that sounded great. I'd love for you to be in my band, but if you're gonna be in it, like, my thing is I do, he does very true to styling renditions of music from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. So he's like, there's if you're gonna sing it, you need to sing it as written. Like, that's basically what I want for this band. And so he basically like offered me the chance to like I would go to his house twice a week and basically learn all of these tunes. And he took my tune list from like 15 songs to like 50 songs and kind of showed me how to learn music the correct way, like by myself, which is reminds me of this quote that you said, imitate and then grow from there. So, because I remember I'd go to his house, And he'd be like, okay, I see that them their eyes is on your list. Sing them their eyes. And I go, I fell in love with you. He's like, no, that's wrong. Let's look at the original sheet music. And he'd sit there with his guitar and go, ba 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 do 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 do, and help me like really actually learn the original melody, which is helpful because I also, didn't have a traditional background in learning music. So having somebody sit there and help me instead of me trying to read sheet music was, so helpful. And through those like weeks of working with him, like I gained, to me, that was the closest thing I had to like a teacher for this sort of thing. And so all of this being said, his big band was doing tunes from mostly 30s and 40s. And so a lot of the tunes that I was singing was from like Helen Humes, Helen Forrest, like talk about Betty Goodman, Artie Shaw, Count Basie. And the biggest thing with these songs was, especially working with Glenn, was enunciation and really making sure that you can understand these like beautiful lyrics that you're singing, but also not making it sound like I'm over enunciating everything. You want it to still sound nice. So like in terms of in listening, it's almost one of those things that was a subconscious inspiration, because I wouldn't have thought this if I haven't like gone back and listened to the way that I approached like jazz music, 7 years ago than I do now. Like I can tell that kind of vocal clarity and hearing the lyrics that I'm singing is something that I really find important, because I pick all of these tunes because I love the lyrics. I'm not gonna sing a song with lyrics I don't like, So for that, I would say like, Helen Forrest singing Amapola is like classic, and like Helen Humes doing like Bolero at the Savoy, like those are definitely like the big band singers are just people that I definitely model myself my style after, but so that's that part of the question. And the I would say for the like instrumental side and like actually physically how I use my voice, I would also Ella's gonna be the number one. Because I think that I always love when a singer has the ability to almost change their tone. Like when you hear her singing something like more in her like upper register, especially with her, when she was her voice got a lot richer as she got older, but like the way that she approached the notes was like there was still a warmth and like a velvetiness to it, but in a way that felt like, I guess light is the wrong word, but just it was, she's just like kind of resting above it. Like it didn't feel like she was forcing it. And then she can flip it down, and have the most like rich, warm, lower register. And I've always been, a like a kid with a low voice, like especially a low singing voice. And I've kind of trained myself to be able to sing higher, now, but so it was always wonderful to hear vocalists that had like a warm, rich tone. Like Ella, I think, was a good example of that. Sarah Vaughan was a big example. And also for me, Anita O'Day kind of played a big role for me, especially when I was kind of like learning more jazz music, learning more of the like the history of it, and listening to everybody. I love the way that like if every vocalist could be compared to like an instrument, she almost has this like reeded like saxophone quality to her voice. Like there's this like airiness to the way that she can approach certain things. Like it's, I wouldn't say nasal, but it's like you can hear it in certain, and it's not, it's something that she chooses to use to accent moments in a song. And I think that I love like hearing somebody creatively choose to switch a word around. Like one of my favorite things to do now, at least in the past couple of years, because I think that, I've had a lot of growth as a like since I from when I started to now. And like I recognize that in the beginning I was just trying to sing the songs correctly, and make sure I hit the notes and like have the right breath support. And now I've kind of, put the 10,000 hours in and gotten to the point where I I can kind of rely on my voice. Like I understand it very well. I know what it can do and what it can't do. And also a lot of these tunes that I'm playing night after night, I've been doing these songs for, almost 8 years now. So there's a familiarity to it. So I love getting to mess with like it's not like the Marilyn Monroe effect, but it's like getting to add some like vaudevilliness to words sometimes and like and not just like singing the notes through, but like it act like accentuating certain bits. Like I think Peggy Lee was a good example of somebody that could kind of do that. Like, but so it's almost like there's all of these tools in my toolbox, and just depending on what mood I'm feeling, I'll come out, which is fun because it feels like it wasn't always that way. So now, just recently, like in the past like 2 or 3 years, I'd say that that feels like something I can access now, and I've kind of like leveled up a little bit in that way for what I can, try to do for myself. Because if I'm singing songs the same way every night, I'm gonna lose my mind.
Oh
So
yeah. No, I mean,
it's fun to play around.
I think you're absolutely right. I think as creative people, we can't stand to do it all the same way all the time.
Oh gosh, no.
No, it would just drive it drive me crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And but I think your examples are spot on based on when I listen to you when on your recordings and what I hear. And
Yeah.
I do hear that those things that you describe in terms of your vocal quality and that and I think yes, Ella Fitzgerald's flexibility is certainly something to be admired. I think about, you know, one of my favorite recordings of hers is when she, from the Live in Berlin album where she does Mac the Knife
Oh
and she forgets the lyrics and
yeah.
so she
She's so
starts
smart. She like who else do you know that can come up with these lyrics and like and she does it all the time. Like to be able to think about a lyric that makes sense and just swings perfectly and change the note at the same time, like that takes so much brain power. Like it's
But I
yeah,
was
I don't
thinking, even like, you know, when she's going down the list and when she names Louis Armstrong, she sings
know.
in this, like, you know, with a growl like Louis Armstrong. And I've always
She just
admired
loves
that
it. Yeah.
or loved that. So that's really, really pretty cool. And it, you know, and the idea that the voice can have different inflections and different ways of doing things as an instrument is really, really fascinating to me as well. Probably about a year and a half ago, I interviewed the co-directors of a group called Room Full of Teeth.
Okay, wonderful name.
And well, if you're not familiar with them, you might want to check them out. It's a vocal group, but they really specialize in non-traditional vocal sounds.
Okay.
They really just do, I think, some incredible kinds of you know, what they do with the human voice. It really fascinates me. So, and they won a Grammy this year, so
Oh, that's
they
amazing.
got something they're doing right. But anyway,
Oh.
but I'm always intrigued by the, you know, the human voice and what can be done with it. Just like, you know, I try to find different sounds with my trumpet, you know, and
That's
I can,
exactly what I was about to
you
say. Like
know, like
when
with
you start
mutes
out, yeah.
or put my hand over the bell or even maybe sometimes change my embouchure just a little bit,
Yeah.
but it's no different, no different.
No,
Well,
not at all.
let's get to what is your most recent recording, Everybody Loves a Lover.
Yes.
Would you tell us about this album and how it came to be and maybe some of the more significant aspects of it, things that be points of interest for our my listeners?
Yeah, so I did this record with Turtle Bay Records. It's this like this label in New York that's doing wonderful things and giving like me and my musical community a platform to just make music that we love, you know. So for this, I really just wanted to put together a bunch of tunes that I just find really wonderful and wanted to record. There's And coincidentally, they all end up being about love in some way or another. So I joke, it's like songs for the heartbreakers and love makers. Like there's happy love songs and sad love songs, but the theme is all there, you know. But no, the tunes themselves are kind of all talking about, finding tunes from the past, like They're all tunes that I've kind of discovered over the last, like, 7 years, just listening in various ways or having friends show me them. And I, especially when it comes to some of the more obscure tunes, like I Fell in Love with a Dream or What Can I Say After I Say I'm Sorry, like in my mind, there's no reason why these tunes should not be remembered the same way as LOVE or Sunny Side of the Street. Like they're just, I every time I find a song that makes me go, whoa, what is this? Like my immediate reaction is, oh, we have to record it immediately, or we have to like remind people that these songs are still here, because there's so much music out there. Like, what if it got lost? What if nobody ever heard that song again? And that's, like, what a thought. So I think that for some of those tunes, that was definitely the feeling behind it. But it was also just, I had the opportunity to make something that I enjoyed and had all my friends with me, and I got to creatively kind of design a lot of it. Like the I love just putting all sorts of stuff together. Like I definitely am a crafty person, so it was fun to kind of plan out the album artwork and like arrange the photo shoot and do everything and figure out the music video, the animated music video. So it's just fun. I just love getting to have the freedom to just unleash my craftiest, artsiest self in the music side and the production side, And I also, I love to, sorry, one of the bits I
That's okay.
forgot was, because also I knew I wanted to make something for the dancers too, like, because it's such a huge part of my life. So, and, kind of discussing my inspirations, like what it's, I love swing. I love big band swing, 40s, 50s, 30s, you name it. Like, so I really wanted to kind of pay homage to that in this particular album, in all different ways. I think that you kind of hear it in, like, I Fell in Love with a Dream definitely feels more late 30s, whereas something like Moonlight Savings Time feels like late 50s, early 60s, So it's kind of different, little snapshots of music that I enjoy.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I read on your website that many of your arrangements were co-arranged by Danny Yonaguchi. And Danny's been a guest on my show, and when he was a guest, we had a really great discussion about the tradition of big band music and Lindy Hop dancers, in addition to other projects that he's doing. So, how much did Danny's vision of the tradition of big band music impact your arrangements and your approach to the songs on Everybody Loves a Lover?
So it's funny. I've actually known Danny since I was 16. He was one of the people that would be playing with me when I was coming up to New York. So kind of touching on what we were chatting about earlier, where it's like sometimes if you get to play with somebody so much, you kind of are aligned with certain things. Danny and I have been that way for, I guess, almost like 10 years now, which is crazy to think about. So even though we both have our own projects and, kind of come and go in waves, in terms of getting to actually be in the room and work together, I immediately knew that he was the person that I wanted to do this record, because like since I wanted to kind of have an ode to that big band swing sound, like who does that better than Danny? And also, since this was my first time really putting together a full album and having like concepts in mind for each tune, I really found it kind of helpful and also just comforting, like in terms of like feeling relaxed in a space, to be able to have somebody that I know kind of understands my like method of explaining things that might be like a little bit non-traditional. Like if I say like, hey, I want this one to have like a spooky intro, or like imagine this one like you're spinning around the room, and like obviously it's not all chaos like that, but there's a little bit, we're kind of on the same page with certain things. So it was nice to have like a kind of a musical partner that I could like lean on in that way. And it's nice, like it was great to have him in the studio, because like I said, my music theory side is limited. If somebody played a note in the chart wrong, I wouldn't know, but he was on top of it and was able to really just, it was nice. It was good to have him like by my side in that.
Sure. Well, and then you sang on his album too, if I remember.
Yes, that's
That's
right.
actually that's how I think that's how I ended up contacting you, is when I after I interviewed Danny,
Amazing.
and I kind of just went down the list of all the singers that because he used a lot of different singers, and I think that's
Yeah.
how I ended up contacting you,
Wow, that's
because
really
you had
cool.
well, that's what I thought, and I to be able to make contact with a lot of other great talent. So it's of
Yeah.
course that's usually how I work. When I do an interview, I look at who plays with them, and then I learn about them, and then will contact them as well about being on my show. It's how I keep it growing,
Absolutely.
So
It's all one big community.
well, that's what I'm finding out, and it's really, really interesting when I talk to people here in Wisconsin. And I tell them about, well, I've interviewed so and so who's in New York, and they tell me about the environment there and how wonderful it is and how people work together, and it's not as cutthroat in a overt sort of way. I mean, it's
Yeah.
competitive, yes,
Yes.
but people are nice and they're cooperative, and they try to be professional, work together, that sort of thing. And
Yeah.
sounds like a really great environment to be in.
I love it. And I had a thought recently, and I think it applies to this, where I was kind of discussing the dichotomy of just everybody in the scene. There's this, for me, I think the way that I kind of view it is there's this sense of community within it, in the sense that, like, as long as nothing insane happens or people, like, quit the music scene entirely, even if somebody moves, all of these people and musicians that I work with and my friends work with, we all are gonna know one another and be in each other's circles, like, kind of until we die. You know what I mean? So there's this, like, instead of, maybe working at an office where you might, or working at a school where you might leave the school and move to another group of teachers, like, there's this thing where even if, because Danny spent most of his year in LA this past year, but like, and I've got musician friends all over the world, and I never am worried that I'm not gonna see them again, because it's all like, we're all in this for the long haul, if the world will let us. So there's something that's kind of, you can't just not help your fellow person, you know what I
Exactly.
mean? Like, if I were to be out here being like, I'm only here for myself, I'm not trying to make friends, like, it's, I don't really view that as, like, so the concept of the cutthroat style, like, I mean, people can use it. I don't know what the outcome would be, but like, I think for me, it's just like, there's a level of grace that can be given
I
when you
agree.
realize, like, oh yeah, we're all in this together. Like, I don't want to burn a bridge if I'm going to see you every day for the next 25 years. Like,
Well,
it's always going to be better if we help one another, you know?
and I think the other thing, I think there's more to be gained from cooperation and collaboration than there
Absolutely.
is from anything else. I mean, a
Excuse me.
question that I was curious to know, in addition to, fronting your own projects, are you doing other gigs or recordings with other people or other side projects?
So got a whole bunch of side projects. So Gordon Webster, the pianist that I talked about, he and I, we've got a lot of gigs coming up. We're playing at DCLX and in DC, which is a Lindy Hop, at the end of the month. And we're gonna get to go back to Jeju, South Korea in July, which I'm so excited about.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So it'll be good, and we're playing at Lincoln Center August 1st. So we got stuff like that, and then I work with this band called the Hot Toddies, and so we're always playing. We're at Somewhere Nowhere every Wednesday, which is a club in the city, and we're actually going to be recording an album in the next coming months. So that's exciting to do that, and then let me see. Outside of that, I work with this amazing burlesque theater called Company XIV. And I started working. I'm not in any shows right now, but I'm hoping to get to do something like later on once our schedules align. But I worked with them for the past 2 years, and it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. It was my first time being in a environment that wasn't a majority of musicians, you know. They pitch themselves as a Baroque burlesque like dance theater. So it's crazy. It's like a combination of professionally trained dancers, vocalists, aerialists, there's jugglers and belly dancers and like amazing pole dancers. And it's really cool. I always tell people it's like the Baz Luhrmann Moulin Rouge. Like it has that energy to it. So I started working with them 2 years ago, and it was amazing. So that's one of those things that they're constantly doing new shows, and it's one of those things where I might not be doing anything with them now, but check in a couple months and I'll
All
probably be
right.
somewhere, so it's
Cool.
nice. There's always fires that I'm stoking.
Well, yeah, you've got to have a lot of irons to go
Yes,
in the
absolutely.
fire
Too
so
many
that,
irons.
yeah, I know. I feel the same way. Some people always give me a bad time about I'm supposed to be retired and why am I keeping so busy? And I said, 'cause I don't know what else I'd do with myself, kind of thing.
Yeah, and
But
honestly, I think too, I always had a lot of people try, especially when I was starting out and kind of doing the pop music thing. I think I had a lot of folks tell me that, I should really try and fine tune what I do,
yeah.
and like, if I'm only going to do pop, I should only do pop, or if I'm only doing jazz, I should only do jazz, or
Yeah.
and kind of make it easier for people to consume, I guess. But and in the beginning, I tried to kind of listen to that because I was like, oh, you have way more experience than me. Like, how do I know what's right? But I think now, kind of after, just my time just doing what I'm doing, I'm kind of like, every listeners are smart. The audiences are smart. Like,
Sure.
and it's kind of like what we were talking about with that band that does a show for one. It's like getting to see the different things that I do is letting you in on my personality, and my personality being the fact that I love all music, and I'm not trying to just do this for 5 years. I'm trying to do it for my whole life. So, in the concept of a whole life, spending a couple years focusing on original music, a couple years focusing on jazz, doing both at the same time, maybe I'll do a show at a burlesque club, maybe I'll try something else. It's like that lets you into kind of my brain and my love for just anything musical or creative. So it's
Well,
nice.
I think, variety is the spice of life. And I
It
think
really
that
is.
I've often thought that that's why I love music, because there's so much variety in music, it's, and it never ends,
Yeah.
just when you think you've got everything, the tiger by the tail, then something new comes along, a new style or a new artist or something that you discover that completely hits you from out in left
Yeah,
field, and you go, this
absolutely.
is cool. But well, Everybody Loves a Lover came out in September, and so now that album is out, do you have a plan for, or do you have a new recording in the works or planned, I should say?
I do. I'm so
Ah.
excited. So this is
Excellent.
actually, yeah, so I'll give you the insider scoop. But no, so
Okay.
we kind of just figured this out a couple weeks ago, but I'm gonna be doing a Spooky Jazz Volume 2, which I'm so excited about. Because during the pandemic, I put out an EP called Spooky Jazz, talking about just ridiculous things to do for the love of it. And it's exactly what it sounds like. Jazz that's spooky. It feels, because I always say, like, there's so many jazz tunes that, especially old standards, that I think are perfectly fitted for like Halloween or like the month of October. And so I kind of in back in 2020, I decided on October 1st that I wanted to do a Halloween album, and we got it out before Halloween, and we recorded. It was very COVID safe. We like had everybody in separate like sessions and like days, and so we put it together, and I took the pictures for it in my bedroom and put a black and white filter on it and released it. But I have always loved it, and since then I've been doing like anytime I'm trying to coin myself as the Halloween person. So I have like Hannah's Haunted Halloween shows, and one time I did Hannah's Nightmare Before Christmas, because I do a version of the Oogie Boogie song from
Oh
Nightmare Before Christmas. But So it's always been something that I love and wanted to do another. And Turtle Bay Records was like, we love the idea, go for it. So now it's like that same thing where I have the excitement and the freedom to kind of to not just take pictures in my bedroom and finish it in a month. Like we have the time to really make something fun. So I'm so excited. We're going in to record it at the end of the month, and it will be out before this Halloween. So I'm like so
Oh,
excited.
that is so cool. I love finding songs like that. My wife and I did a, we have a duo. She's a pianist, and so we have a duo we call Brass and Ivory.
Oh, fun.
So
Great
trumpet
name.
and piano. And we did a Halloween show this last fall and put together, you know, not every song that we did on the gig was Halloween oriented, but we did standards, and then we'd throw a Halloween, you know, type song like, you know, Monster Mash or something like that in there. But I found a song mostly because of a another singer I had interviewed not long before Halloween, and she had a recording of Sweet Pumpkin.
Oh, I don't know that
Oh
one.
yeah. Oh, it's
I'll
from, yeah,
have
it's from the 1950s. It was I can't remember who wrote it, but it's got a really cute, you know, lyric and melody. It's you know, be a sweet pumpkin 'cause
Oh my
I'm in
God.
love with you. You
That'll
know,
be Spooky Jazz Volume 3.
yeah, there you go. But anyway, I thought I told my wife, I says, we've got to include this song. And she says, well, the gig's in 4 days. I said, that's okay. I'll write it out. We'll be fine. And so we did, and we made something of it and had a lot of fun with it. And I told the audience, I says, this is may not necessarily be specifically for Halloween, but at least we know it has to do with fall because it's about a pumpkin. Well,
Well, there you
anyway.
go. And I know for my, it's also a lot of the tunes that, because for the original Spooky Jazz, like No Moon at All is on there, Close Your Eyes is on there. So it's like tunes that are not necessarily like about Halloween. Like I definitely have some, like The House is Haunted, where I want to be evil, where it's a little bit more clear. But then that's where the element of kind of adding that Vincent Price feel to like the music. That's where it becomes fun. And I'm excited too, because some of the tunes that I have for this record are I firmly believe that the a lot of the big band or the music, certain tunes from the 20s, I think were like tailor-made for this genre. Like, and I think that there was probably a recent like a everybody was like, let's make songs that sound this way. But it they're like the spooky jazz material is just there's so much of it from the 20s. So there's a few different tunes that we're gonna do that I'm hoping are a little bit not as well known and just fun. You know, I'm excited to, since we have the time and the opportunity, I want to kind of do little Easter eggs for certain like kind of spooky Halloweeny things that I enjoy. Like if you hear, you know, the melody from Transylvania Lullaby from Young Frankenstein or something, or like little bits, you know. So there's a lot of room to play with it. And we haven't done it yet, but it's all I've been thinking about. So I'm
Oh,
very
awesome.
excited.
Well, we'll look forward for when that comes out. That
Yay,
sounds like
thank
a great
you.
project.
And
Well,
check out the first one if you haven't. It's fun.
oh, okay, sure will. Sure will. For my younger listeners, because I have a few, not the bulk of my listeners, but I do have a few. What would you tell someone aspiring toward a performing career in music like yours? What advice would you give them?
Well, I can only give my advice, but
That's
I
fine.
guess I would say I think it's important to kind of be a sponge a little bit and just like, and I say this from experience where I think whenever I feel self-conscious, I tend to just talk a lot instead of actually listen and observe. So it took me a little while to just be like, oh, let me look around myself and see what's going on and just like take it all in. And I think that was helpful for me. But then I also think I think it's always important, especially for vocalists. I think that especially when you're getting into it, it's important to remember that even though some people like to say that vocals are not an instrument, you are a team with the musicians that you play with. And if they don't treat you like a team member, that's their problem. That's not your problem. So it's important to like have a relationship with the musicians that you work with. And if you're worried about maybe calling endings or trading, it's always helpful to have a conversation with people. And like everybody just wants to, nobody can read your mind. Everybody wants the song to sound good. So it's just like kind of, and I say this from my own experience, things that I've learned. Like sometimes it's hard to get out of your head. And so it's good to just communicate with people and remember that you're all a team. It doesn't matter if you don't physically play an instrument, if your body is your instrument,
That's right.
you're all equals. And that also goes the opposite way. Don't think that you're better than the musicians. You know what I mean? Like treat everybody with respect, because I guarantee you most people wouldn't want to hear just a singer on stage. It takes the whole like whole pie. But so that's that one. But then I guess just most of all, and I think that this has just been the whole theme of our conversation, is just like, don't forget that like you're doing this because you love it. Like the reason why we do what we do is because of the joy of like creativity and the joy of music. And I've had multiple moments where you just kind of you forget it, and you get like bogged down with different things or having financial troubles, or like I was getting stressed out this past year because I had to figure out health insurance. You know what I mean? Like there's always moments where you can forget like why it is that you're doing what you're doing. So it's so important to just kind of l remind yourself of that and just be like, okay, like does this week suck? Have I made $60? All right, well, would I rather be doing anything else? No. Okay, then I can be sad for a little bit, but you got to get yourself out of it because you're here for the love of the music. And I think I remembered that when the pandemic hit, because when I had no work, like it made me realize like, wow, so much of the joy that I derive out of life is getting to make music and spend time with the people that are either playing at the shows or that attend the shows. Like that is the thing that makes what we do great. And to have that taken away, I think that it kind of shoved that perspective in my face. I think that's just something to keep in mind. Like, remember why you do what you do. It's because you love it,
You
you
know,
know?
I love the way you think, because that's the way I think. You know, I in addition to playing trumpet and doing a podcast, I also conduct two
Yeah.
different concert bands. One is a community band at the university where I retired from, and then I do a concert band for older adults. Well, you know, sometimes when you're working with people, they get really hung up with you're going to get, you know, really upset with them if they make a mistake.
Yeah.
And I have to remind them. I said, that's not going to happen. I says, you have to remember, we play music. We don't suffer music. We don't toil music. We don't slave music. We play. We're here to have fun. We're here to just grab all the enjoyment that we can, because, you know, you're right. There are the mundane day-to-day things that we have to deal with. But, you know, when you focus on music and why we do it and the sacrifices, quite frankly, that we make to be able to pursue this art form, you know, we're not living in the lap of luxury.
No,
And
that's true. I just paid my taxes. Don't I know
yeah, I hear you. I hear you. We're in the same
it?
boat. And I always joke with my sidemen when we go to a gig. I says, guys, let's make sure and have fun, because we're not going to get famous and we're not going to get rich,
There
but
you
we're
go.
going to go up and have fun. And we always try to have fun on a gig. So but I like to tell that. And when I work with young people, I always try to remind them. I say, you know, you don't have to go on and become a professional to continue enjoying music. I said, there's community groups, there's all this kind of, you can, you know, play when you go on to college, all this kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And don't ever let go of it, because it's a special kind of thing that we have.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I want to, Hannah, for a bit. You mentioned earlier about writing music, and I want to drill down just a little bit with your creative process. And when you think of the last song that you wrote, what came first? Was it a melodic idea, a rhythmic idea, a particular set of chord changes, or do you start with lyrics or a particular mood?
Well, there's not a formula for me, unfortunately. It'd probably make my life a lot easier if there was. But so for the last song that I wrote, Well, the last song that I wrote, it was like incomplete for a while. Like I wrote this tune, and it was like I kind of it would it was like verses and like a hook, but I felt like there needed to be something after that to like a true chorus, but I couldn't figure it out. And when I first wrote the tune, I was like, this is perfect, it's done. And then I went back to listen to it and was like, no, it's missing something. And so then I just kind of, and with that, I was just, for that one, I was just sitting at my guitar and just kind of playing around. But then like a couple weeks later, I was just like, oh wait, I have like a melody in my head. And then sat down and like made a chorus for it and then completed the tune. But I think for me, unless if I have, like, I don't, lyrics and melody kind of happen at the same time for me. Like, unless if I'm, like, I don't necessarily like write out a poem and then put it to music. You know what I mean? That's not, that's not normally how I'd write tunes, but I'd say like I haven't always been proficient at like guitar and ukulele, so I think coming out of having like vocals being my main thing, I think I always tend to kind of focus on that a bit more and then would learn to accompany it afterwards. But then as I've gotten better at playing guitar and ukulele, I think the whole process just kind of happens together. I guess for me, actually, there might the melody is probably most important because sometimes there are things where it's like I know that I want to have this melody, but I can't think of a word that's going to fit in this way, or like I don't want to say the like I don't want to say this word twice in a phrase. Like, what can I do? How can I change the form to like fit with this? But yeah, there's really no formula to it though. I wish there was.
Well, I mean, everybody's different.
Yeah.
I've talked, I asked that of every composer and songwriter that I've interviewed, because I'm always curious about the creative process and
Yeah.
how we think in music. Because I believe that creative people who are musicians think in music. We think
Yeah.
musically.
Yeah.
Some of us have a sort of a synesthetic response. We see like we see a sunrise and a musical idea comes to our head,
Yeah.
or we
Well, I
see,
definitely always have a concept in that sense, like in a tone that I want to portray, I will say. 'Cause I think that one of especially when I'm writing music, it's funny because I'm a very happy person. I love my life, but it's funny. I can tell that my like bittersweet emo kid comes out whenever I write music. Like, and so I'm just like, so like, because if sometimes when I like look at my lyrics or something, they're not always like the brightest and happiest, but I almost feel like by putting that with something that sounds beautiful, it like makes it like it's almost it's like therapeutic for me in that way, you know, being like, how can I take this and just make something that I think just sounds nice? And normally when it comes to, and in that way, like as long as I have like a concept in my head, then the melody and the tone would come first. And since I have that concept of like what I want to portray in that tune, the lyrics don't need to be blocked out right away because I know what the theme is. Like I can figure it out as it goes. And it's almost like a creative writing class, you know, where it's like if the prompt is just like write about wanting to spend a summer day laying under a tree, like in the shade, you know, like you can write that song and have lyrics that kind of stray away from that theme and maybe reference other parts of your life. But then remembering that that's the prompt, you can then bring it back in like even just something as simple as like referencing like a leaf, like you know, and like how it's like turning something over. So it like there's definitely a I like a poetic approach to songs that doesn't feel like too like contrived, if that makes sense.
No, I know what
Because
you're
I also
saying.
I like add like lyrics about nature all the time in my stuff, and I'm always like, oh God, I hope I don't sound like one of those people that's only singing about like trees and water and stuff. But if it's like if it's done in a way where I guess if it still even though the melody comes first for me, if I could read the lyrics on a page, does that does that bubble something up in me the way that like maybe a piece of like poetry would, even if it's not rhyming, you know, like so I think it's like I want to hit all of those marks, but I would say that one is probably the one that I would do like last to be like, okay, at the end, does the concept match the finished product? And does it give me that tone, that energy that I was setting out for, you know?
Well, are you currently writing anything?
Yeah, I mean, well, I have a bunch of unreleased music
Okay.
that I need to get into a studio and record. It's the classic musician's dilemma where it's
Oh
like,
yeah.
I need to make money to be able to pay for a studio and record the stuff, but making money is the my jazz music, you know, and which I love to do. So it's like the sort of thing where it's the cart before the horse almost in a way, you know. But or the chicken or the egg, that's the right analogy.
There you go.
But I do know that I've set an internal goal for myself like this year that I want to at least put some of my original music out, because I think I always get, and maybe this is something that like musicians can understand, where it's like if you do one genre, like it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't love and respect the other one, you know? So like
Oh,
these are the
sure.
things that I really care about. And I think sometimes when it comes to recording my original music, maybe I get tripped up because I'm like, oh, well, if I record it and put it out, then I'm going to need to do shows. And that means I'll need to get the band together and rehearse the band and maybe get charts. So it all makes sense. And then it like I'm thinking about it in the gig sense, which is a valid way to look at it. Because I mean, you obviously want to play live shows if you put out music,
Oh,
but sometimes I can get overwhelmed and be like, okay, it's just too much. I'll just do it later. But like it's almost like one of those things for me. I'm like, okay, I need to put this music out for me because I like it and I want people to listen to it. And hopefully I can put a show together. If it doesn't happen, like it, at least the music is out there and we can do a show down the line, you know? So it's, I don't know. There's also for me, there's more anxiety about my original music because I feel like if you come to a jazz show and you hear me sing and you don't like it, then you just don't like my voice and that's fine. But if you hear my songs and you don't like my songs, like I wrote that, you know, like so there's that sort of like inner like ah like
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, because that's it's your baby in a lot of ways, your creative baby that
yeah.
you've
But then
done
it goes
everything.
back to what we were saying where it's like remember. It's like the thing, the advice that I should be telling myself, like, remember why you do this, you know, like you do it because you love it. So why would I let my anxieties or my kind of unanswered questions about this stop me from doing this thing that I enjoy? So it's just like a constant reminder, like, because there's con like social media and like YouTube and everything, I think can make it look like certain performers have their lives together more than others. But the more people I talk to, like, everybody's just kind of figuring it out. Like there's no formula for it. There's no method for success, you know? So I think it's just like kind of reminding yourself of that and treating, because everybody has like anxieties around what they do and how to like how can I as a musician feel like I'm representing myself the best, or like how am I being authentic enough, or like all these crazy questions that people build up in their head. Just remembering like we have these questions, but like, why not just do the thing that you love? It's like, it's like, I don't know. Life's too short, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, it's
I have
sort
to
of
constantly
like
remind myself.
It's sort of like go out and do what you want to do and let the chips fall where they may, and just know and accept the fact that some people aren't going to like what you do, but others are going to go, wow, that's really interesting. I really like
Exactly.
that.
You know, this is funny, and this is a good way to, I think, put a button on this. There are so many. So one of my favorite movies is Wayne's World, and there's a quote that like they do in Wayne's World that's it's so silly. Like it has nothing to do. It's not has nothing to do with anything. But I think about it all the time, especially in moments like this where you are worried about being too perfect or not perfect enough. Where I think it was Wayne was like, what was it? They're like, Led Zeppelin didn't write music that everybody loved. They saved that for the Bee Gees. And like, it was like, that's all. But like, I think about that all the time. It's like, okay, yeah, like, yeah, I'll be Led Zeppelin in this scenario. It's okay. Somebody's always gonna write music that everybody's gonna love, but you don't gotta do that because think about how cool Led Zeppelin is, you know? And
I
I
mean,
love the
there's,
Bee Gees, but.
Well, I mean, that's just it. I mean, musical tastes are fickle anyway.
Exactly. You got to do what feels good for you.
And you've got to be, I think every artist I've talked to always talks about being genuine and being real as the most
Yeah.
important things, because they've said, an audience can tell when you're contrived or you're fake or
Yeah.
whatever kind of, or you're not being who you really are.
Absolutely.
And yet I think also, when we're on stage, we are portraying a role. I mean,
Oh,
we're
I mean, you're giving them the old razzle dazzle. But to me,
exactly.
that is not like I love getting to put on a show and being like my stage version of myself. But in
Exactly.
my mind, that is also myself, you know.
Yep.
If I had to read off a script and somebody to tell me that I couldn't do some of the things that I would normally do on stage, then I might feel a bit more confined. But
I hear
I
you.
think
I hear
everybody's
you.
stage personality is that's still part of you.
I agree. I agree. It's in some ways it's an exaggerated you.
Yes,
At least I
exactly.
think that's why. I mean, I tend to be a little more how shall I put it? Tongue in cheek,
Yes.
goofy,
Yeah.
try to be funny all the time. I mean, I'm a consummate entertainer.
Yeah,
But anyway,
no, definitely.
yeah. Well, speaking of being entertained, if I could magically come to New York in the next few weeks and I
Yes.
wanted to plan my trip around seeing you, where can I see you in the next few weeks?
Yes. So, well, every Wednesday, unless if we get bought out by a private event, every Wednesday I'm at Somewhere Nowhere, with
Somewhere,
the Hot
nowhere.
Toddies, and it's a crazy space, actually. It's on the 38th floor of this like building on 25th and 6th in Manhattan. And it's free, no cover. And you go up and there's the view of the Empire State Building and there's swing dancing and cocktails. And there's a swing dancing lesson like that happens between the first and second band break sets. And so that's kind of every Wednesday. But that's like a nice regular gig that I have. But other than that, mostly what I do is traveling. So
Okay.
like I'll be in DC for the DC Lindy Exchange at the end of the month. And then I'm gonna be in Saint-Georges in Quebec in early June. I'm doing a show May 25th and my right outside of my hometown in Oxford, Maryland at the Oxford Community Center. And so there's a whole bunch of stuff. I'm going to
Wow.
Korea in July. So it's like, so the one consistent one though that you can rely on, obviously I won't be there in July because I'll be in Korea,
Right,
but
right.
it would be Somewhere Nowhere.
Okay, Somewhere
Yes.
Nowhere in New York on the 38th floor. That sounds like a lot of fun. Well,
It's
if
crazy. The
I.
first couple times I did it, I had to be careful that I didn't get vertigo because when it's really windy, the PA system will start swinging back
Oh,
and forth, and
my
you're just like, oh
goodness.
God, I'm up here.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing about skyscrapers. I
I
know
know.
it.
It's like I know that they need to bend so they don't break, but I still
Yeah,
don't like
I hear you. I hear you. Well, that's
seeing
exciting.
it.
Sounds like I better come by bus though, so I can travel around where you're going. But that sounds
There
like
you
an
go. Yes.
exciting itinerary for the next few months. That's awesome.
Thank
And
you.
then you're working, getting ready, working on new recordings with the Hot Toddies coming up, and you've got
Yes.
your own spooky jazz.
Exactly.
And lots of good projects for us to watch out for. Well, that's
Thanks.
awesome. Well, Hannah, I try to be as thorough as I can be when I interview a guest and try to ask everything I can think of that would be pertinent, but I know I'm not perfect. So my last question for you, is there anything else you'd like to add or tell my audience that I have not asked you about?
I mean, we have been very thorough. I would say maybe go check out my music video, but that's about
Oh,
it. Like, so
okay.
I, it's a, so this is, so I released a music video for Put 'Em in a Box, and it was animated by this wonderful animator named Hamza, and I wanted it to kind of take on the same energy as the album artwork, which is that kind of, like 40s, 50s, like, style of illustration. And so the music video is cute. It kind of reminds me of like the Jetsons and the Flintstones.
Okay.
And so I was very happy about it. So I'd say check that out. But other than that,
Okay.
I mean, just thank you for giving me the opportunity to just like share a little bit about myself and what I love to do, you know. So it's I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, Hannah, thank you for taking time to talk with me today. And I
Absolutely.
want to wish you all the best with what I'm sure is going to be a continued successful musical future.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Let's see what happens.
All right. Well, you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
My discovery composer of the week is Elizabeth Ogonek. Born in 1989, Ogonek grew up in New York City. Her primary teachers included Don Freund, Claude Baker, Michael Gandolfi, Donald Crockett, Stephen Hartke, and Julian Anderson. A former Beneke and Marshall scholar, she holds degrees from Indiana University Jacobs School of Music, the University of Southern California Thornton School of Music, and her doctoral degree from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. She is currently an assistant professor of composition at Oberlin Conservatory, where she has taught since 2015. In 2021, she will begin an appointment as assistant professor of composition at Cornell University. Elizabeth Ogonek's music has been described as shimmering, dramatic, and painstakingly crafted by the Chicago Tribune. In 2015, Ogonek was appointed to the Chicago Symphony Orchestra as the Mead Composer in Residence, a position which she held alongside Samuel Adams until 2018. During her tenure with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, she was commissioned to write three new works: In Silence, a chamber violin concerto featuring violinist Benjamin Bielman, which was premiered under the direction of Elam Chan; an orchestral work entitled All These Lighted Things, conducted by Riccardo Muti, and later featured on the orchestra's 2017 West Coast tour; and The Water Cantos, a work for 12 players commissioned in celebration of the 20th anniversary of Music Now and premiered under Esa-Pekka Salonen. She was also responsible for co-curating Music Now, the orchestra's new music series, which brought together Chicago Symphony Orchestra musicians with composers to explore the music of today, as well as influential works of the 20th century. Ogonek has also worked closely with the London Symphony Orchestra, for whom she has written two orchestral works, As Though Birds and Sleep and Unremembrance. Both pieces were premiered under the direction of François Xavier Roth at the Barbican Center. In early 2020, the LSO gave the European premiere of All These Lighted Things, while the Toronto Symphony Orchestra gave the Canadian premiere of As Though Birds. Other orchestras that have performed her music include the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, the Civic Orchestra of Chicago, the American Composers Orchestra, and the Music Academy of the West Academy Festival Orchestra. Recent notable chamber and solo projects include two works for the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival, a work for Ensemble 360, a solo piano work entitled Orpheus Suite, commissioned by the Music Academy of the West, and a Fromm Foundation commissioned work, Where Are We Now, for pianist Jacques Bjerken, percussion quartet, and male vocal sextet, on a text by Paul Griffiths. Upcoming projects in the 2021-2022 season include a new chamber work for the 75th anniversary season of the Chamber Music Conference and Composers Forum of the East, and a new orchestral work that has been co-commissioned by the BBC Proms and the Los Angeles Philharmonic. In the summer of 2018, Agonik was in residence at the Music Academy of the West in Santa Barbara, California. Her music was also featured in the 2018 BBC Proms in a collaboration with Gerard McBurney. In early 2020, Agonik was in residence with the Flux Quartet at Kanagawa Kenmin Hall in Yokohama, Japan, for performances of her string quartet, Running at Still Life. Agonik's work has been recognized by the ASCAP Foundation, the Royal Philharmonic Society, the Ohio Arts Council, and the American Academy of Arts and Letters. The All Music Guide currently lists three recordings of Agonik's music, her As Though Birds for orchestra, Sleep and Unremembrance for orchestra, and Where Are We Now for piano, percussion quartet, and male vocal sextet. In my show notes is a link to a YouTube recording of Agonik's Sleep and Unremembrance, performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by François Xavier Roth. Well, that puts a wrap on episode number 186. My show notes, along with links to artist websites, recording label websites, YouTube videos of artist performances, are all posted on my Facebook page, The Musical Universe of Professor Hurst. Next week, I'll be interviewing Nashville-based singer-songwriter Lori Triplett. We'll be talking about her newest album release, When the Morning Comes. Other upcoming interviews include San Francisco Bay Area-based blues harp player and singer, Big Harp George, Corey Adams of the folk Americana group, The Moonsville Collective, and New York City-based jazz singer, composer, and educator, Aubrey Johnson. So don't touch that dial. If you have questions, comments, or a suggestion of an artist, composer, or musical style for me to consider, you may email me at hurstc@uwm.edu. So until next time, this is Professor Craig W. Hurst and Carmel the Wonder Dog signing off from The Musical Universe of Professor Hurst. Have a great day.